Welcome to Johnson Controls AHR Special Podcast Edition, everybody. This is our first podcast, as we will be discussing refrigerants for the next 30 to 45 minutes and what's changing as we push forward into 2016 and beyond. My name is Ryan Nolan. Our panelists for our discussion include Brian Smith. Brian is a Director of Global Marketing, Chiller Solutions, and Product Management. And Bill McQuaid, Director of Global Energy and Sustainability Policy. Bill is an ASHRAE, in the ASHRAE organization. He is currently on the board of directors and has served on various councils and committees at the society level. So, Brian and Bill, thanks for taking some time out of your schedules to speak with us today.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here.
Well, let's get into some refrigerant discussion here as we are in the midst of AHR in Orlando, Florida. First question will be to Bill, and then Brian, you can absolutely add your knowledge as well. There's been a lot of press about refrigerants, HFCs, and climate change. Can you give us an overview of what's going on right now?
Sure. This is Bill McQuaid. The refrigerants in the past have been covered under what's called the Montreal Protocol, which was, as many people might remember, an amendment to phase out of CFC and HCFC refrigerants that damage the ozone layer. Our industry, starting in 1989, made a very significant transition away from those chemicals and developed products for sale here in the U.S. and abroad that use HFCs, which are non-ozone depleting chemicals. In recent years, there's been a focus on global warming and climate change, and all industrial gases and naturally occurring gases are being inventoried and taken a look at to see if there's a way to reduce global warming impact of those gases. And some of those gases are classified as high global warming potential gases. And unfortunately, the HFCs that we use fall into that category. So with this focus on climate change, our industry is again coming under pressure to shift out of the refrigerants that we have transitioned to and look for more low GWP options for our equipment. So that's what the renewed focus is. At the same time, we've had a lot of global growth, particularly in China and in India. And as those economies become more affluent, the people in those countries are moving toward refrigeration and air conditioning. And as such, there's been a tremendous growth in the use of HFCs over time, over the last 10 or 15 years, and that's caused concern by climate scientists that we're seeing a proliferation of those HFCs globally and that controls need to be put in place. So more recently, there's been proposals in the original Montreal Protocol to start controlling, not phase out, but phase down the use of HFCs. And then we're also seeing regional efforts in Europe, in Japan. There's a proposed process in Canada and certainly in the U.S. with some recent what's called SNAP delisting rules that have been implemented and are in process of being proposed recently.
Yes, this is Brian. There's been a lot going on. There's been a ton of press, a lot of changes, and you know, from my vantage point, it's been really confusing to try to just keep up with what's going on, especially as a global multinational company as we are. We see things moving at different speeds throughout the world. We see some countries are still moving out of HCFCs. Other countries have been out of HCFCs for a number of years. You'll see China's starting to move quickly away from the HCFCs, although they are still acceptable and allowed there. But we're starting to see a lot of growth into HFCs and even beyond that in some cases. Europe, as normal, has been way ahead of the curve, looking at a lot of different changes. That's where we've seen some of the most rapid advances and improvements or adjustments to the market. But it's been crazy, and I think it makes it difficult for customers as well as manufacturers and regulators to really get their arms around this. But it is encouraging to see that recently the changes between the Paris talks on climate, that we're starting to see some, alignment around the world towards some consistency and some regulations. And I think that painting that clear picture and a clear picture of the playing field, so to speak, in the marketplace, it gives us as manufacturers some assurance on where the markets will be and where we should make our investments. And it gives our customers a bit more confidence in building their plans as far as how they deal with owning assets that are going to last 10, 15, 20, 30, even 50 years with their buildings.
Absolutely. You mentioned customers. Maybe, Bill, you can get into that a little bit more and how the changes can and could impact the customers on their level.
And certainly there's a number of different dimensions that are important to the customers. Obviously, transitioning to new refrigerants, we have to pick ones that allow us to meet or exceed the current energy efficiency regulations. So performance is obviously a first priority for us, and we and I'm sure the other companies in our industry will only pick those refrigerants that allow us to do that. The other impact, one is the availability and affordability of the refrigerant. These chemicals are more complex than the current refrigerants that we use. They are also, I guess, more expensive to produce. They have additional steps in the process of development than the current refrigerants. So there's a good chance that those refrigerants are going to be more expensive and the most likely significantly more expensive than what we have today. Certainly with market penetration, increased production capacity, those costs will come down over time. But we're seeing factors of 2 to 5 times on some of the refrigerants, and that's something that we need to take into account, not only with the refrigerants that we choose, but with the design of the equipment. So it's important for us to use heat exchanger technology that uses a minimal amount of refrigerant, things like that. The last thing certainly that's important is the reliability of these refrigerants and what that's going to mean from a service and maintenance standpoint for our customers. These compounds are designed to break down more readily in the atmosphere. That also means that they are less stable than some of the refrigerants that we've used in the past. So selection of oils, ensuring proper maintenance and checks are done, developing those new procedures for charging and maintaining equipment are going to be important for us to develop as a company and for the industry to adopt as a best practice. So all those types of things are in play, and each of those dimensions are important to us as we choose refrigerants and develop new packages moving forward.
You know, if I could add, when I think about our customers and I think about building owners, we've, as an industry, we've spent the past 30 years moving away from CFCs that deplete the ozone layer, HCFCs that do the same, and in fact are still in that transition, moving away from specifically HCFCs to a significant amount of the market today. I don't have exact figures, but it's just rather sizable portion if you look around the world that use HFCs in the marketplace. And over those 20 to 30 years, we've highly optimized products around those HFCs, and you see the performance gains over the years, driven partially by regulations on energy efficiency, but also by the innovation of manufacturers such as ourselves with the compressor technology, heat exchanger technology, So what you have today are highly optimized products around HFCs. And from a customer standpoint, that's great. They get great performance. They get the best cost of operation, low overall cost of ownership, reliable products that tried and true, tested for decades, literally. And refrigerants that are readily available at a very cost-effective price. As Bill mentioned, you know, some of the newer refrigerants are still very much in their infancy, and you know, kind of the laws of supply and demand, you see a significant price add for some of them. And, you know, that'll settle out over time. There's no arguing that some of these new refrigerants will definitely have their place in the market. But as we look at those decisions they're making today, how, you know, in the start of this transitionary period, how do they make good decisions that they're not going to regret 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road when they have a piece of equipment that might go obsolete? They don't want to be making that second purchase. They want to put it in the basement, put it on the roof, turn it on, and as long as the occupants are comfortable or the process they're running is running smoothly and efficiently, it's out of sight, out of mind. And that's, you know, maybe we don't like to think about that, but for the most part, the less they think about our equipment, the better off they are, right? So that causes some real challenges for how they make those choices in the long term. And what we're trying to do is as we shape our activities around refrigerants, the engagement we have with industry organizations, and Bill's done a tremendous job working with you know, across ASHRAE, AHRI, EPE out in Europe and in Asia as well, Middle East, India. Our presence is felt, and we're highly engaged in those activities. The other perspective that we have an advantage in really understanding this situation is aside from just being a manufacturer, we have an extensive service organization, and we, until recently, with the divestiture of the Global Workplace Solutions, we have actually owned and operated a number of these buildings, and now with our relationship with CBRE, you know, that's going to continue. So we have that insight to not only the manufacture of the equipment, but also the servicing as well as the maintaining and ownership side of how it works. We've got to be in it for the long haul, and you know, regulatory changes aren't quick, and that's the painful part of our industry is how do we have to place our bets for our investments and look at what's going to happen 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years down the line to make sure our customers don't get stranded.
Well said. You mentioned regulatory changes there, Brian. Bill, I'm wondering if you might be able to add on that or dovetail on what actions is Johnson Controls taking to get ready for these regulatory changes.
Yeah, and I think this really does tie to your last question, too, about impact on customers. As I participate in a lot of different areas regarding refrigerants, what stands out to me is that our customers really don't have a say in what's going on. And I think we, from very early on, have taken the stance that we are advocates for our customers, because at the end of the day, our relationship extends much past the sale of a single piece of equipment. We want to be a partner with our customers throughout the life. So as we have the resources and the ability to get into these forums and make concerns known and talk to regulators and industry associations, we make sure that we keep you know, what's best for our end customer out in front and make those entities aware as much as possible. Now, certainly, you know, when it comes to what actions are we taking to be ready for these changes, it's probably my most favorite quote from Abraham Lincoln is the best way to predict your future is to create it. And that's really kind of what we've done. We've been very proactive, partnering with many of the chemical producers that are developing these new fluids to work with them, not even from the prototype stages, but even in discussions with them prior to them even developing some of the first chemicals. about what's important to our industry, what's important to the design of effective equipment. How can they develop fluids that give us properties that actually enhance the performance of machines, not just replace the ones that we're taking out. So the first step in our process is certainly to be doing the research, partnering with the producers to know up front what the performance characteristics of these refrigerants are, what the stability characteristics of these refrigerants are, what advantages can we gain from the use of these refrigerants that give us capabilities that we don't have today with our existing refrigerants. So that's kind of the first step. The second step is that we work with our other companies in our industries through industry associations and alliances to make sure that the voice of our industry is heard by regulators. And that's not just here in the United States. Brian mentioned EPE, which is the European Partnership for Energy and the Environment. They're a group that has been working for about 7 years now trying to affect the European F-gas, which is fluorinated gas regulation, regarding HFCs, and have been very successful in getting a regulation passed in Europe that is favorable for our industry for a smooth transition over time. We participate in similar organizations here in the U.S. that talk to our EPA and to Department of Energy, because they're an important player, because changes in refrigerant also affect energy efficiency, and with some of our organizations, alliances that deal with the negotiations of the international agreements, like the Montreal Protocol, like the climate agreement, the Kyoto Protocol, and we make sure that our voice is heard there. And then lastly, through those associations and alliances, we've been able to develop relationships with regulators, and we've even been called upon to actually go visit the industry and government of other nations, such as India, the Saudis, a lot of developing nations, where we've come and been technical experts that advise and educate their regulators and their industry folks on what is possible when it comes to alternative refrigerants that have a lower GWP. So, again, we've been out in front. We've been providing thought leadership. We've become a go-to resource for governments when they develop regulations. And as such, I think we have a good amount of influence on whether or not those regulations come out to be practical or not. And so that's certainly how I view my role and Brian's role also to make sure that whatever does come out of regulation in the future, it's something that's practical, logical, and something that isn't going to disadvantage our customers to an extent that is unreasonable.
Yeah, Bill, that's a great point too. Brian, one of the things I think it's really critical here is the proof is in the pudding and the actions that we're taking. If you think back a couple of years to October 2014, Bill, as well as Laura Wams, our leader in the chiller business, attended a White House event, and we made commitments to spend over $50 million on the behalf of Johnson Controls, trying to really tackle this greenhouse gas challenge that we have. You know, our industry has to move. You know, if we're having to make decisions that are, years or decades out, we have to be very thoughtful and insightful. And Bill's up on the forefront with looking at the regulatory picture because of the lead time that it takes to get regulations put in place, to put codes and standards to address the new regulations in place, as well as downstream of that, the enforcement. Those are kind of long lead items that it takes. And this past October, we upped those commitments. Not only are we spending that money, we went on and added five commitments to that. Pardon me. And the way we view our customers, and you know, it was interesting Bill's comment about how our customers don't really have a say. And you know, while we do see some of the big multinational customers that have a environmental message that they're trying to move forward and an image that and the actions behind it to try to promote, the actual end use customers are not well represented there directly, and that's what we have to be really careful to make sure as manufacturers that we look at their long-term interests. So the commitments we made to increase the level of commitment we made for improving the climate situation is taking the products that we have and finding ways to make sure that, one, we can provide solutions that in the long term the customers won't end up with a stranded asset. So what does that mean? That means finding solutions that products that they're installing into their buildings today, that we're shipping from the factory today, but they're compatible with low GWP refrigerants down the road. Whether or not today is the right time to make that shift, we're making that irrelevant, right? Because if we have highly optimized piece of equipment today, that's going to give them the best performance and overall cost of ownership, and provided they're servicing the equipment and maintaining the integrity of the equipment, our refrigerant's not going to escape into the atmosphere and have any impact on the environment. We're going to keep that in tip-top shape. Now, should something happen down the road with regulations that restrict the availability of HFCs or any other refrigerants for that matter, well, wouldn't it be great if we could make the equipment virtually regulation-proof? So that's the first commitment we've made, is to take our equipment that uses today's refrigerants that are available in ample supply and make them compatible, you know, backward compatible or forward compatible with lower GWP refrigerant. The second commitment we made was to then offer that from the factory. Now, we could offer that from the factory today, presumably. However, if the refrigerants aren't readily available, are we really helping our customers when something happens, a unit goes down, damage happens to the equipment, and the refrigerant leaks out? If it's not available for a quick turnaround, then we have customers where their buildings are not kept cool. Their processes aren't kept in line. So offering those from the factory will be another offering that we provide. And then not only are we looking at what we're selling and providing into the marketplace today, but we're taking a look back. As the leading manufacturer of HFC-based chiller equipment around the world, we have a significant installed base. And that's, if you want to look at where the lion's share of the use and the consumption is, it's actually what's in there in the marketplace today. It's not what's being produced each year. So looking at retrofit services, how do we take equipment in the field that's maybe 134A-based equipment and bring that up to date with new refrigerant if something should happen down the road with availability? So we're keeping the customer whole from the standpoint of maintaining their operation. And then the last two commitments both revolve around flammability. And our industry is going to have to make a big shift. From over 100 years ago, when we had very caustic, toxic, flammable, dangerous fluids with ethers and such that were used as refrigerants, as our industry was trying to figure out how to make and transport coal, the first step to CFCs was to eliminate those safety risks. CFCs were great from a safety standpoint, great versus what was being used. Today, as global warming potential and climate change, greenhouse gases, as that becomes a focal point, it's driving the industry back towards flammable refrigerants in some sectors, specifically the smaller scroll and rotary type equipment. But codes and standards aren't where they need to be. Practices in our industry aren't where they need to be. There's going to be a major shift that's going to have to take place to be able to enable a pathway forward for those flammable refrigerants. So the last two commitments are a commitment of investment dollars to do some research on how we make that safe. And then the last commitment was, how do we make sure the people who are operating and maintaining equipment are safe, have the right service training, the right operating and technician maintenance programs to keep the people that are around the equipment day in and day out safe. So we've got a lot going on, and that future for ourselves and the customers and their facilities.
Absolutely. Very thoughtful. A lot going on there. A lot of layers, for sure.
Certainly has
been there. No question.
A lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not kidding. Well, let's go on to the next question here and address the R513A refrigerant and what is happening in that respect. I don't know, Brian, if you want to handle this question, and Bill, if you want to add on at the end or vice versa, you guys, it's up to you. Your call.
I'll start it, Bill, and you can take over.
Sure.
We're making some announcements here with the upcoming EHR show. And hope everyone's enjoying the show or has enjoyed it by the time they listen to this. We're announcing the use of the Opteon XP10 produced by the Chemours company as our refrigerant of choice for our existing R134A-based equipment. That's a significant change. That's fulfilling that first commitment of offering products that are forward compatible. And the key thing there is, you know, we see availability is still not quite where it needs to be in a lot of local markets. We see the practices are in the marketplace and familiarity aren't quite there, and we're working with our partner to make sure we secure that. And when I say local markets, we have to think globally in, you know, our impact and reach is pretty widespread. So we're thinking all the way down to that local city, that town, that village, that industrial park. Can they get the fluids they need there? And it's some places it's available, some places it's not. But first and foremost, making sure that's available. Compatibility, we've tested. It's on our key centrifugal and screw product lines, which is the majority of the chiller business that we have. We're fully compatible, ready. But, you know, from the standpoint of availability, we're still looking after that longer-term interest. That'll change over time. The pricing, I think Bill alluded to that earlier. The pricing for any of these new refrigerants is still a little bit more than we'd like to see for the HFCs. So over time, as we see wider spread adoption of the Opteon refrigerant, we'll start to see that pricing come down. And then, you know, performance, we've been very pleased with performance in our equipment. So, yeah, we see that from an operational standpoint, it's not like back in the days where we had to go from R22 to 134A, and you saw a 20 to 30% reduction in capacity or performance. Yeah, we're seeing pretty comparable results on both capacity and efficiency, not just full load, but also the off-design conditions where people operate most of the time. Bill, what do you have to add to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this 513 or the trade name of XP10 is one of those real success stories that has come out of our partnership with Chemours, which is our strategic partner, the former DuPont. This is one of the mixture refrigerants that we had an early participation in the development of. They, based on input that they got from us and from others, they developed the properties of this refrigerant and it is very, very close in performance to 134A, so the impact on equipment from a redesign or development standpoint is very minimal, which allows us to not only have the conversion ability of equipment, but also the opportunity to retrofit equipment that's in the field. We did that in the past with CFCs based on some of the options that we had, and it looks like we're going to be able to do that again. From a global warming standpoint, which is what's important here, it is about half of what 134A is, actually a little less, and that is again very positive from a regulatory standpoint on the aims that they're trying to meet. And the fact that the performance is very close, that from an energy efficiency standpoint, it's something that we can get back to what our current level of efficiency is pretty easily. So I think it's one of those success stories. It is non-flammable, which makes everything much easier, and makes it a great candidate for large water-cooled equipment, both screw and centrifugal. And I think you'll see this not only in our equipment, but in others in the industry. And it is EPA SNAP approved, so it's all the green lights are currently available for it, and we look forward to offering that as offering it as an option in our existing equipment.
Yeah, Bill, I think I'm glad you mentioned the non-flammable. I think our engineering teams are happy with that. Everybody likes to work with something that's safer, and the ability to use an A1 ASHRAE 34A1 type refrigerant. Like 134A or 410A is great, because not only is you don't have to make any significant changes to the equipment with class 1 div 2 type wiring and explosion proof this and that, it extends into the facility itself. You don't need to have additional ventilation and additional monitoring above and beyond what you would normally put in there to address that safety side of it. So and that's a significant reason why we looked at that refrigerant, because there is a lower GWP refrigerant that we could get. It's non-flammable. It's great. Dealing with flammability is not to be trifled with. And while our industry does have to deal with that and will in some sectors, it's going to be a challenge. And we have a long, extensive history working with highly flammable fluids. We have wave chillers in Europe that run on propane, but we also have customers that buy that equipment that have the technicians, they have the safety precautions taken, and they have the wherewithal to use those. And that's not for everybody. That's an extreme case, but mildly flammable, that can be scary for some people. And it's going to take us, as well as our customers, not to mention the insurance industry, some time to get their arms around that.
And really, for large charge systems, anything that's flammable is really a no-go. Just to the amount of charge that you have, the fact that they're typically installed within the building, in the basement or the penthouse, a flammable option is not really practical, unless you're in an industrial-type setting. So, that thing, it's a little different if the equipment's sitting outside on a rooftop or something like that, but certainly for large centrifugals or large screws where you have a significant amount of refrigerant, it's non-flammable is the best case.
Great insight, guys. You guys touched on Chemours there. Obviously, is there anything else you want to add about JCI's partnership with them and the relationship to the customers?
Well, I think they've been a great partner with us, and as we go forward into this venture, they're committed to making sure that we address those markets and systematically make sure that inventory is in place. And while we're making announcements on that future capability, I would caution not moving too quickly in terms of retrofitting, because if you're in one of those regions or locations where it's not readily available, you're taking a risk. And there is nothing really restricting any refrigerants today, and we don't see any of that for the foreseeable future, but we do see that people do want to move. So Chemours has been a very active partner with identifying where they have inventory, where they don't, and then working with their distribution to make sure that we get that in place to make sure that we can expand that offering and make sure it's available to a broader sector.
Yeah, and they were kind of our first strategic partner in this area. Since then, we've developed relationships with other producers that are similar. But the great thing about it is Chemours is not only a partner from a research and development standpoint, but they're also a supplier, and they've been very good about keeping the supply chain negotiations separate from our strategic partnership around refrigerants, because the development of these things spans multiple supply contracts, and they've been very good at keeping those two things separate and looking at the future, and it's been outstanding. They've learned a lot from us. We've learned a lot from them, and I think together, we'll bring this refrigerant to the market, and it'll it'll become a play a significant role in a lower carbon future for our industry.
Sounds great. We're looking forward to that, certainly. Next question, I guess, Brian, you can handle this one if you'd like. How could the proposed changes affect existing equipment and new equipment as we push forward?
Okay. Well, from a lot of our current equipment, very little impact to existing equipment. We validated that the gaskets, the lubricants, the O-rings, all the materials of construction are fully compatible. So just from a pure hardware compatibility standpoint, we're in good shape. So customer buying one of these pieces of equipment today would have really no invasive changes needed to the equipment outside of pulling the charge and putting a new charge in. But, you know, I'd caution against moving too quickly. The fact of the matter is, if they're looking at a low operating cost, the other refrigerants could be, the 134A in our equipment is going to be a lower cost operation. Now, should, like I said before, something happen to the equipment or their charge, and they want to make that shift, refrigerants available locally, they want to make that investment, by all means, Chemours and Johnson Controls stand behind that and are able to provide that. New equipment as we produce it today is compatible. We are working towards having factory provided options for the refrigerants as well, but we're not quite there yet. We've made those commitments this past October that within the next 12 months we would have that product shipping from the factory, and we're well on track to meeting that commitment this year. So no issues there, but you'll have to wait for the next podcast for that one.
There you go. Bill, did you want to weigh in on that, or?
I think he covered it well.
Okay. Certainly, we'll move along here. The next question, what actions should customers take now? If not now, when?
Yeah, I think, Brian, if you'll let me start, maybe you can finish this one. Certainly, with the internet now and with a lot of the snippets that we get from press releases, it's difficult to get the real picture out there. So it's important that customers kind of do their homework a little bit, make sure that they aren't reacting to a headline in a trade magazine or something that maybe doesn't cover the whole gamut of what's going on. Certainly, I think we, as Johnson Controls, I told you before that we look at ourselves as advocates, but we also can be providers of information. And certainly, we were doing as much as we can to educate our field folks to know how to answer questions that they might have. There's as far as regulations that are eliminating HFCs, there aren't any that currently exist at this point. There's some things that are being negotiated that may give a timeline to the eventual phase down or even possibly phase out of some of the refrigerants that we have today. But that'll be done in a way that's doable for the industry and not adverse for the customer. At this point, it's sit tight and wait. If you want to be an early mover, we're going to be providing equipment, as Brian talked about here, within the next 12 months that people can do to go forward. If you want to hedge your bet, you can select equipment that can be readily converted in the future, or wait. The current refrigerants that we have today, the 410A, the 134A equipment, provide extremely efficient, high performance, extremely reliable equipment. And I think customers are good with waiting to see until there's some more regulatory certainty out there.
Yeah, I would mirror Bill's comments. I think do your homework. I answer phone calls multiple times per day, per week, where someone will call up, panic, they see the latest news clipping, and they think that HFCs are going away tomorrow. And, you know, I think what I've found is, you know, I think it's, you know, for all the benefits of communication tools like Twitter have, if people aren't reading beyond the headlines, they're getting drastically off course and really going to make bad decisions without truly understanding the implications, the long-term implications to not only the environment, but also the operating cost for their facility. And so get informed, read, ask questions, you know, contact Johnson Controls, go to our website, do your own research. I can't emphasize that more. And really discern for yourself, you know, what are your priorities? You know, we, just as an example of, you know, kind of unintended consequences, there are refrigerants out there that are tremendous refrigerants when it comes to global warming potential, you know, single-digit refrigerant or global warming potential, but have a dramatic negative impact on the efficiency of equipment. Well, if your electricity is coming from a coal-fired power plant and you put a refrigerant in there that causes the equipment to use more energy, you're actually doing more damage to the environment than you thought you were by helping going to a lower GWP refrigerant. So there, it's not easy. That's the biggest challenge. And if we look at kind of a single number type approach or think of a simple solution, there's a lot of damage that can be made. And that's my maybe caution to customers as well as anyone that may be listening on the regulatory side of it. It's technical, and that's, you know, they're really smart engineers that have to figure out how to provide the best overall solution to our customers. So,
yeah, and this is Bill again. I do a lot of ASHRAE chapter presentations, and I always end my refrigerant presentation with this advice for the customers in the room. If you really want to be green, if you're really serious about reducing emissions and the carbon footprint of your facility in the environment, the best thing that you can do is to purchase the most efficient piece of equipment that you can get.
Yeah, well said, both of you guys. Yeah, I think you hit on it, especially research. I think that's a key component, and hopefully this podcast will inform and enlighten our external audiences and let them know, you know, a lot more about refrigerants and what steps they can take moving forward. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up here. Well, I want to thank both of you, Brian Smith, Director of Global Marketing, Chiller Solutions and Product Management, and Bill McQuaid, Director of Global Energy and Sustainability Policy. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedules to talk about refrigerants and push the ball forward, so to speak. I want to thank you, anyone out there listening to this podcast, for taking some time out of their schedules to tune in. Well, we certainly enjoyed getting this available for everybody out there who is looking to learn more about refrigerants as we move forward. And enjoy AHR 2016 in Orlando. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Yep. Bye-bye.